Hello, I'm Molly Wood.
And I'm Kai Rizdahl. Welcome once again to Make Me Smart. We are joined, as we always are, by you, because none of us is as smart as all of us, as we like to say.
As we do. Love to say. This week, we have a Make Me Smart / tech show crossover, which is very exciting. It's like CBS or something, like some of the people from The One Show or on the NCIS or on the... Anyway.
Well, no, it's like they do with Justice League and Supergirl and whoever it is on whatever that network is. I don't even know.
I like that you went to comics and I went to like... mainstream TV shows, the names of which I could
today
not even recall.
Today is opposite day on Make
it's
Me
opposite
Smart.
Day. It's so weird. Kai just went pop culture nerd.
Oh my God.
We also went pop culture nerd on both Marketplace Tech and Make Me Smart. We have a crossover interview with Andy Weir. He is the guy who wrote The Martian, which, as you know...
God, what a good book. I love that book.
God, it's so good. And it became a major motion picture starring Matt Damon. I think there was an Oscar involved. Andy Weir has a new book out called Artemis, which I believe Kai loved a little bit less.
A little bit less.
But it has a lot of elements that we like to talk about. The new economics of space, which we geek out on Marketplace Tech. And then actual just economic stuff. It is about some shady business on a moon colony. On Marketplace Tech, we talked about Andy Weir's obsessive research situation and also welding.
Welding and aluminum smelting. Wait, if you're going to call me out on not necessarily loving that book, although I will say that there were some nice elements, but overall not as good as The Martian, where did you come down?
Yeah.
Or have you not read it yet?
Same.
Oh, same. All right.
No, I come down in exactly the same place.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
So after Molly did the Marketplace Tech interview, I came into the studio and we did a little chat, Andy Weir and me and Molly, about the economics of space, which turned into a conversation really about currency, about the financial crisis of 2008, and some other stuff, because Andy Weir honestly likes to talk about economics probably more than I do, which, you know.
Kind of true. Yeah.
Kinda,
all right.
It is true. Totally true.
So we are going to get right into it.
Here is what you need to know about Andy Weir. He does a ton of research for his books. He took up physics before writing The Martian. For his latest book, Artemis, as Molly said, he wrote a 10-page paper about the economics of building a city on the moon, which is what the book is all about.
Because of course you do,
yeah.
Fun fact, he wrote, in order to simulate whether the description of like a certain landing on Mars would work in The Martian, he wrote the program. He wrote a software program.
Did he really?
To like, do that. It creates a hurdle for book writing that is hard to clear. But so we kicked off the interview by asking him why he wrote that 10-page economic paper.
I guess the main rule on being a writer is you should always write books that you yourself would enjoy reading. And I am much more of an economics dork than I care to admit. I love economics. I love thinking about that stuff. I acknowledge not everyone does, but I like that stuff. So one thing that always bugs me when I'm reading a fiction story about, oh, here's a city on the moon or here's a million people who live on Mars and stuff like that, is I'm like, why? What is the economic foundation? You know, that might be a research base or something like that. I understand that. You know, like the pole station in Antarctica, you know, that sort of stuff. But if you're talking about a city full of civilians, you've got a bunch of people who moved there voluntarily on their own. They emigrated there. And there has to be some economic reason for them. Every city on Earth had some economic reason for being founded. Either it was at like a good place to put a port in the river, or it was, you know, in a nice pass, you know, where that was easy to pass through, or there was a lot of really good farmland right nearby or something. So I needed to figure out what is Artemis's reason for being. And I came up with tourism. I don't know what direction you want me to go with this, but I could use up the entire time slot just rambling. So I'll let you ask another question.
Well, let me ask a more fundamental question, right? And that is how you decided upon the unit of currency and how you came to actually establish the monetary system.
Well, in Artemis, they use a unit of currency called a slug. Slug stands for soft landed gram, and it's a reserve currency. But it's not a precious metal reserve. It is a service-backed reserve currency, which means you can exchange slugs for transporting material from Earth to the moon. So one slug gets 1 gram transported from Earth to Artemis. In a roundabout way, that's what my paper ended up being about, was doing a bunch of analysis on, you know, where I think the space industry will go, and ultimately how far it could drive down the price of getting something from the surface of Earth to the surface of the moon.
You don't have an economics background, right? You're like a space physics computer dude?
I'm a computer geek. Yeah. My only, formal training, whatever college stuff, was software engineering.
Huh.
And I didn't even get my degree. I'm a high school graduate.
Is that right? But, I didn't know that. Yep, I should have known
that's
that.
That's it.
Wow.
Yeah, I ran out of money. But I have an interest in economics in the same way that I have an interest in physics, although I'm way less skilled in economics than physics. Hmm. But then I just try to remind myself, I'm like, well, I'm just writing a book here. I'm not I'm not going to have an entire country go into a decade-long recession if I'm wrong. Right?
On the one hand, this makes me feel like, okay, this is Google and a whole bunch of math. I could totally do this. And on the other hand, I'm thinking, nope.
I would run out of steam, man. I would be like, ah, screw it.
Yeah, you have to be interested.
We've been talking a lot about the money on mm-hmm. you have in your book, and we've mm-hmm. been talking a lot about on this podcast, confronting this sort of question of how markets work, whether capitalism is working for enough people. And that is obviously a big driver of this book. There's all of the sort of usual corruption and have not stuff that's part of our mm-hmm. economic system right now.
Mm-hmm.
Do you anticipate that that would be the case, that none of those rules, none of those priorities would change?
That's such a good question. I hadn't even thought of that. It's this book is full of haves and have-nots and all of that. That's totally true, as is life.
Yeah, I wasn't trying to make any sort of statement about that. That wasn't that's not a theme in the book. It's just a reality of the human condition. I don't think that's ever going to change. If you ever attempt to set up a system of rules that makes things even, then the people who set up that system of rules will be the haves.
But it's funny, right? Because as you laid out elsewhere in your writings, a two-week vacation on the moon is like $70,000, which is a whole mm-hmm. lot of disposable income, yo.
Yeah. Well, at $70,000, I think a lot of middle-class people would do that. People would get second mortgages on their homes and stuff if that meant that they could go and spend 2 weeks on the moon.
And is that a good thing, macroeconomically speaking, right? Because we had a whole financial crisis that was built on people taking equity out of their homes to buy BMWs.
Well, that was more of like a tulip bulb,
Yes. But you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah. I don't imagine that the tourism to Artemis would have any effect on an economy the size of the United States. Or pretty much any major country. Artemis has a population of 2,000 people. It gets maybe 1,000 to 2,000 tourists at any given time. That's not enough to affect, a first world nation's economy.
Well,
even if every single one of those people then immediately went home and defaulted on their mortgages, it wouldn't matter.
One economy that is profoundly impacted, though, is Kenya. Like, this whole corporation that runs Artemis City is built out of Kenya and not the U.S. or Russia or China or anybody you normally think about in terms of colonizing the moon. There's no SpaceX involved. Walk us through that. How does the Kenya Space Corporation come to be?
Well, my fictional Kenya realized it had a natural resource that it could offer the space agency that very few other countries could, in that it's on the equator. Launching from the equator is cheaper than launching anywhere else on Earth, because of the rotation of Earth. If you think about a globe spinning, the equator part of the globe is going much faster than, say, the top third. So if you launch from the equator, you get about 1/16th of your total orbital velocity for free, just from the rotation of the Earth. So that's a natural resource they have. But any country that's on the equator can offer that. The other thing that they did was they said, and this is based on my conversations with lots of little private space industries, from big guys to SpaceX, all the way down to little guys Moon Express, who are trying to make a little moon probe entirely out of private money, a lunar probe to win the Lunar Google X Prize. They all agree that the main impediment to commercial and private space travel right now is no longer technology, it's policy. There are just so many hoops and red tape and crap you need to jump through to get a launch license from the U.S. And it's the same in every other country where you could possibly make something like this happen. So what Kenya does, my fictional Kenya says, we're not going to have any of those rules. Just file a flight plan with our, aviation administration so we don't crash planes into your rockets by mistake, and we'll call it a day. I mean, the government of Kenya helps create the Kenya Space Corporation. It's actually more of a conglomerate. It's 50 different companies all over the world invested in it. They made special laws that only apply to the special super business friendly laws that only apply to the to KSC. They snatched up all the land, the best land, you know, on the coast of Kenya to build a launch complex and said, yeah, we've made that eminent domain and you can, you know, rent it from the government for, you know, one Kenyan dollar per year. Kind of. I mean, they did everything they could with the idea of bringing in the space industry. And in my novel, it worked. And so now that's why the space industry pretty much runs out of Kenya. And then the Kenya Space Corporation built Artemis and they make their money. Their revenue model is build habitable volume on the moon and then rent it out. They never sell property ever. Every single lot in Artemis is rented.
So here's what we're going to do. We're going to ask you what we call our Make Me Smart question.
Okay.
Take as long as you need to answer it or to think about your answer because it's tricky. What is something you thought you knew, but then you found out you were wrong about?
Okay. Let me think about that. It's really more a matter of choosing from the many, many times. I thought for sure, I thought that Mars had 1/90th of Earth's atmospheric pressure at the surface. I mean, I believed that all the way down to the core of my being, would have bet my life on it. Turns out I'm wrong. It's about half that. And I don't know how I got it into my head that that was the case. But I wrote like the whole book thinking that, and it was a copy editor who, before it went to print, it kind of circled that and said, actually, Mars's atmospheric pressure is lower. And I'm like, what? Don't tell me about Mars. Oh my God, you're right. And so,
wow.
So, I mean, it was easy to correct. I just had to go back and fix that. But I was like, oh my God, kind of made me question what other scientific quote unquote facts I've been assuming I knew correctly and was wrong about.
Here's the thing about Andy Weir, and this is going to sound like I'm trying to be funny, but I'm not. And this came through a little bit in this interview.
Mm-hmm.
He's totally down to earth.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yep. And he's just legitimately, and I mean this with the most possible love, he is legitimately a nerd.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, you know, this is a guy who just clearly, and you can hear it in his voice, just delights in getting every detail right. And if we're being honest, that's, you know, that's the biggest issue with this book is he's so delighted by getting all of the details right and by creating, you know, the thing we talked about on tech is that his obsession here was in creating a functioning city,
right?
This fictional facsimile of a city on the moon called Artemis that functions at every level down to how the coffee and the scotch taste and how the, you know, what the bar is like and how the economics work and how the city's on the verge of some sort of economic collapse. And, you know, it's so specific that he sort of forgets to give the characters any texture.
Yeah. It kind of gets there in moments and then you're like, oh, no, we have to go do this other thing.
Yeah. But if you're also a nerd, which, I am, then that stuff about the functioning city and the economy is super interesting. And it's also really interesting because Down to Earth is such a great way to put it because he doesn't try to, like a lot of sci-fi tries to create a new economy, universal basic income, right? Already exists and everybody talks about it. But he just transports all the same stuff, like we said, the income inequality, organized crime, you know, corruption, petty crime, personality issues. He just transports all of the way that we kind of live right now to the moon. Doesn't try to shape it in any way.
That is true.
And I think that's kind of interesting. I think that's just sort of an interesting way to approach it. Sort of like, let's not reinvent humanity.
I got the feeling from listening to your interview that you did with him on tech that he views this book and having built now this city, that's going to be his foundation and he's going to do a bunch of sequels. Is that what you got out of that?
Yeah, that's essentially what he said is that he wants to create kind of almost like the Star Wars multiverse thing where he wants a whole bunch of stories to happen in this setting that are not necessarily about the slightly annoying protagonist of Artemis, but lots of different people.
Interesting.
Because I think he sees the city as so real and so grounded and so well built, if he would say so himself, that he wants to set a whole bunch of stories there, which is super interesting.
Yeah.
Do we need to explain what the tulip thing was that he mentioned?
No.
Okay.
No. We don't.
You're just like, no, I'm going to leave it.
No.
I don't know.
No. Tulip Mania, 1636, Holland, the first speculative bubble in the history of the economy. No.
There you go. That's all we needed.
Oh, is that it? Okay.
The other thing, the future sci-fi author slash authors I want to get on are the, it's like a pseudonym, but the two people who wrote the Expanse series, because they also explore this idea. What often is interesting in sci-fi is the idea that economics becomes life or death. Like, what happens to capitalism when someone can control, this was even in Total Recall, Philip K. Dick. What happens when one corporation can control oxygen?
Capitalism, water. I'll say it again. Capitalism does not care whether you live or die.
I know. And so if capitalism goes to space with that ethos, like, lots of people die, I think. Anyway, yeah. I think that's interesting.
Yes.
Future authors to book. As Kai mentioned, there's a lot more Geeking Out with Andy Weir on Marketplace Tech. Go check that out and subscribe to the podcast if you have not already, because that's where you get the longer versions of everything we do. We also have an excerpt of the new book up for you at makemesmart.org.
Info about the book club coming up, and also a little snippet from our most recent editorial meeting on Facebook.
238,000 and more miles away through the infinite night. The landing was tough, but you brought her down. So tell me, what did you see?
Was it Houston Tranquility Base here? The Eagle has landed. That song, the notes from producer Jenny tell me, is called Tranquility Base. Honors, of course, Neil Armstrong, the first guy to walk on the moon. Also, Buzz Aldrin, can't leave him short. And Michael Collins up in the command module, because, come on, there were three of them. A link
Look
to that song.
At you.
Well, come on, I'm a space Apollo geek. That's and Michael Collins always gets short shrift on that thing. Went to the moon, by the way, 48 years ago this year, plus or minus a little bit more this past summer. And so, you know, Andy Weir could be right. Time for a colony on the moon sometime, maybe soon, which would be cool.
Yeah, right? I don't know why we wouldn't. We're so close. We're so close to moon tourism. We might as well build a city around it. Some important information about the last Make Me Smart book club of 2017. We have gotten a lot of tweets to this effect, such as, okay, seriously, what is the drop dead date to read A Wrinkle in Time? The episode goes live on Tuesday, December 12th. That is soon. You basically have 2 weeks to finish the book, understand what a tesseract is, teach yourself physics. You know, no big.
Wow.
Check it out for the library. Okay. You don't have to do all that if you don't want to, but if you're like an Andy Weir type, you totally will.
Clearly I do. Not everybody who listens does, but I do. Just saying.
It is also, of course, Wrinkle in Time by Madeline L'Engle, about to be a movie directed by Ava DuVernay, which comes out in early 2018. I want to get her on the show to talk about it. So, like, if you know her, drop her a line. Just saying. You never know who's listening.
You know, Guy and Molly.
A lot of you,
I know. A lot of you actually have already sent us your emails and your voice memos about the book. For the rest of you, deadline is Monday, December 11th, because we're gonna drop the episode on the 12th. So Monday, December 11th to get us your thoughts via voice memo. Send them via email, makemesmart@marketplace.org.
And yes, everyone, I did notice that he said drop. We'll get to that in a minute.
What?
While you are sending us things, we're also doing a remember I said I'm banning drop. You can't say the episode drops.
Did you send that in this episode or in a past episode? I can't be responsible for past episodes.
You were there.
Are you sure?
It could have been his body double.
There you go.
Oops. I let the cat out of the bag. Where it's your voice double, I guess. You know what? No one could prove it wasn't you as long as it sounds the same.
I know.
Dang, radio is awesome. Okay, focus up. We're doing a prediction show. Send us your predictions for 2018. We want good, really specific ones. Don't be like, it's going to get...
That's so funny, because I literally just wrote down...
It's going to be crazy.
It gets stupider. That's literally what I just wrote down right here.
So,
okay, so not that. Better than that.
Yeah, Kai gets a mulligan on that one. but better than that. On the topics that you're smart about, because I know that you all have your areas of interest. So, you know, if you're working on cancer research, like, give us something there. We will have predictions from past guests. We will have our own, and they won't just be things get stupider, because that's too easy.
All right.
So please get to those as soon as you can before you start eating and drinking and going into the holiday black hole. We will be back a second with some of your feedback, a confession. But before that, we got to pay the bills.
Confession?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Nobody tells me anything about it.
It's really me. I have a confession to make. I miss the news fix.
Oh, yeah. Me too.
Like, I love everything that we've been doing on our show, and I love that we've been having this wonderful deep dive on ethical capitalism, and it's been so interesting.
Yeah.
But I kind of miss just, like, talking about the news.
Yeah.
And I know other people do. But the good news is we're actually still doing the news fix, essentially, over in our editorial meetings on Facebook Live. Here is a sample.
So this whole thing about consumers really don't want to change the rules on net neutrality. Consumers also don't in this economy want to give corporations a giant tax cut, and yet Republicans in the Senate and in the House are going to do that.
Right.
So there is a thematic thing here of extremely unpopular decisions being taken by the majority in Congress or on the FCC. And I think that actually says something about the state of governing right now in this economy and you know, more broadly in tech society, you know?
Yeah. Well, it says that democracy belongs to corporations, you know? I mean, I think you could argue that with Citizens United, companies didn't just become citizens. They became most valued citizens, at least under, I mean, yeah. And that has, we know that on some level that has been the driving philosophy behind the Republican Party for a long time. But it feels like now it's really out of balance at a time when incomes are out of balance. You know, so many things are out of balance.
So that was a clip from us yesterday on Facebook Live talking about newsier stuff, which we call our editorial meetings. We do it every Monday, noon Pacific time, obviously talking about net neutrality. We also talked about the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau and all the weirdness going on over there. Molly had a rant, maybe two. I can't quite remember. It's on each of our Facebook pages. If you want to go look it up, it's facebook.com/Kai Ristall, also facebook.com/Molly Wood. And, you know, you can see what we look like. That's, you know, if that's the worst thing, you can see what we look like.
You could basically prove that it's actually Kai and not a voice double.
So, all right. So true confession, I watched it last night, actually, a little bit. I spend a distressing amount of time not looking at the camera.
That's true.
I do. And you are a very good camera looker.
Well, you're also in that big studio with all the, you know, I'm just sitting in front of my laptop. There's really only one place for me to look.
Yeah, that's true.
And that is forward.
Yeah.
So I'll let you off the hook like a tiny bit. But that's a good note. Note to self. Good job.
That's right.
You do not, by the way, and it is important to note this in this time of increasingly anti-Facebook feelings, you do not have to be a Facebook subscriber member. You don't have to have a Facebook login to go view these. These are parts of our public pages. You can just go and see them. And though, if you want to join us on our Monday news fixes, you can be part of it. We have people commenting all throughout the discussion. You do have to be logged into Facebook to comment there, but you can also tweet us. And we get all these great ideas for future coverage. And it's fun. They're usually on Mondays at noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern. We sometimes are on the road or otherwise out of pocket. But at least in the short term, for right now, that's a good place to get your news fix.
Back in a minute. Make Me Smart and Marketplace are built, as you know, on independent, nonprofit news.
That is right. We believe that it is our responsibility to bring reliable, objective reporting to as many people as we can, to support informed decision-making, rare as it can be, and thoughtful conversations. And we're asking you to help us do it.
Here's the deal, and it's easy. For as little as $5 a month, become a Marketplace investor.
Isn't that a clever name?
I know.
And the payoff is that when you hear us on the air or online or wherever you listen, it's knowing that you're making it possible for us to reach more people in more ways with more content.
All right, so Molly just said what the payoff was. Here's the real payoff. You are helping us produce journalism you can trust, and that makes us all smarter. Now is the time to do that, gang. Donate today at marketplace.org, and thanks. Whoa, that one comes out of nowhere, huh?
Woohoo!
Boom! Listen to that.
Fired up!
All right,
wake up, right?
Wake up. I have not had enough coffee yet today, by the way. All right, time for some mail.
Where do we mail a letter?
In the mailbox.
George Raymond has a point he would like to make about perspective. I'm going with Raymond.
I was recently listening to your show, Distressed Human Assets. You focus on weakness in the United States, especially for the middle class, but you're ignoring the global situation. Globally, the last 20 years have seen the biggest decrease in poverty ever in the history of the world. Markets and capitalism are working great at the global level.
Well, So far be it for me to argue with our listeners, so I won't. But, and yes, that was only how long was that? 20 seconds? Yeah. That is a much longer conversation. Capitalism is working at a global level, but not for everybody, which has been the theme of our conversation, right? It's working for a lot of people, not well for a whole bunch of other people. And let's remember there are 7 billion people on the planet. Moving on, Brent Accurso has some thoughts about Henry Ford.
An episode or so ago, Kai made the comment that Henry Ford's then revolutionary idea of paying your employees $5 a day, or enough to buy the products that they make, wouldn't work today. Many have credited this idea for helping to create the middle class. Given the wage stagnation a large percentage of employees have faced since the late 1970s, the frustration that these employees have that they aren't sharing in corporate profits or successes, and the shrinkage that's occurred in the middle class, maybe it's time we revisit this foundational idea. What would an updated version of this look like today? Maybe a universal basic income or negative income tax is how we'd address it, but I'd like to see something coming from the employer side of this equation, not just from the government. Thanks.
Well, and yeah, therein lies the problem, right? And that's the thing we've been talking about throughout this whole discussion of capitalism, which is that sharing the wealth involves getting people and companies who have money to give up some of it. And that is a difficult, difficult proposition.
Well, also, though, just to that basic question of what would that look like? Yeah. I mean, I don't think you have to go all the way to universal basic income to see what it looks like. You could go to the $15 minimum wage in Seattle.
Yeah, totally.
You know, it would look like an across-the-board wage increase that is not crazy to contemplate. And for the most part, while, yes, it has had some negative effects on businesses there, it has mostly had a good effect. We should get that. We should get somebody on to talk about that.
We should.
Because, you know, it's sort of the opposite of the Kansas question.
Yeah. Wait, hang on.
Here's some typing.
You can hear my typing. because here's why. $15 an hour, which is a thing that a lot of people are talking about and which is where all the drive has been, only gets you to a minimum annual salary of $62,000 a year. Now, the median, right? So it's not that big a jump. It's not like you're rolling in it if you're making $15 an hour.
No, not at all.
And that's an important point.
It's not even all the way. It's probably, you know, in real dollar terms, nowhere near the $5 that Henry Ford paid.
Right.
But it would at least
exactly
be
the equivalent. Right.
Right. It's a sort of a closer equivalent than we have otherwise. And,
exactly.
And I do. Yeah. Yes. I'm going to stop. Todd Ryan wrote to us with this thought. He said, I've really enjoyed the last few weeks of discussion on the future of capitalism. One distinction that I haven't heard is the difference between free and competitive markets. I work in electricity policy, and a free market for electricity does not lead to socially acceptable outcomes. And since the turn of the 20th century, regulators have realized this. A well-regulated electricity market can be competitive and lead to socially acceptable results. I get the feeling that other industries like healthcare, telecom, finance could benefit from better regulation. So do we need to make a new form of capitalism or make sure we return to a form of capitalism that is well regulated?
Net neutrality, net neutrality,
net, neutrality. Net neutrality,
ahem. Ahem. Right?
Well, and banks. I mean, I'm sorry.
Yep.
Like that, watching the arguments this week that the financial services and Wall Street have somehow been devastated by Dodd-Frank and regulation. Watching the president say that while he also daily tweets about their record returns
yep.
is cognitively dissonant.
There is inconsistency, shall we say.
Yes. I think it would be fair to say we could return to a form of capitalism that is well regulated, but we are headed quickly in the opposite direction. And so we're just going to get to see how that experiment plays out also. Last week, I mentioned earlier in the show that I'm sort of over saying that people saying that a podcast has dropped. I don't know why, but it's like my album dropped and this dropped and the new shoes dropped. And I'm looking for a new phrase. Sarah Grolot had this to say. Obviously, she said the best alternative to dropped, as in the newest podcast dropped, is cast.
I like dropped.
Our podcast cast.
No.
Turns out
doesn't
work.
Doesn't work. Doesn't work. Our podcast dropped. Our podcast delivered. Our podcast arrived. Our podcast showed
posted.
Up. Our podcast posted. That's acceptable.
Our podcast was distributed via RSS in an XML container.
Oh my God. Yes. That's okay. Distributed by
catchy.
RSS.
Super catchy.
XML container. Okay, that's what I'm using from now on.
Okay,
oh,
excellent.
My goodness. All right. So however you get these things and whatever the delivery mechanism is, do us a favor. Review us on Apple Podcasts. Tell a friend about the show. Join us on Mondays, usually noon Pacific, for our editorial meetings. Send us your thoughts about the book. Once again, Wrinkle in Time, Madeline L'Engle. You got till like December the 11th to get us your stuff.
Mm-hmm. And due to Herculean effort on our part, it's important to note we're also on Google Play.
Oh.
So many people ask me about Google Play. We're there. You can find us. Go get it.
Here, there, and everywhere.
Make Me Smart is produced by Jenny Josephson and senior producer Nancy Fargali. Special thanks to Marketplace Tech producer Stephanie Hughes for producing the Andy Weir interview. This week's program was engineered by Drew Jostad. Our theme music was composed by our very own Ben Tolliday and Daniel Ramirez.
The executive director of On Demand is Sitar Nieves. The senior vice president and general manager is Deborah Clark.
There will be a quiz.
We should totally do that. In fact, wait, maybe that's how we start.
We should do a quiz. We should start calling people live and seeing if they can tell us who produced the show and who the executive director of On Demand is. Man. Like, go.
Oh, my God. That would be fun.
If you get it right, you get a pop socket.
That would hurt producer feelings, though. You don't ever want to do that.
That's true. Would be like, really good point.
All right, we got to go. Bye.